BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use promo code BLEAVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline. The game starts here.
What's happening? What up, though? What it do? Welcome back. I need my pom-pom. Welcome back to Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. This is Band Sessions with the Boom. It's your boy, Terrell Key, a.k.a. T-Reezy.
And this is your girl, Danielle, a.k.a. Donnie 2.
And I'm Toby Johnson, a.k.a. Fury Styles, 009.
Hold up, Danielle. You didn't change your name. I thought you were Dun Yeezy. Who are you today? You have a lot of different names. We got to figure this out now.
Well, that's my Instagram handle.
Okay. So okay. I'll take that. All right, y'all. So once again, if you have not taken the opportunity to follow us and keep up with us, check us out on all of your platforms that you receive your podcast. We got Spotify. We got YouTube. Go to YouTube, click the like button, and click on the bell. Keep up with us, follow, subscribe, because it all helps the cause. That's the I love, ladies and gentlemen. So we back again. Once again, Toby Danielle, how are you guys doing on this wonderful day?
It's a beautiful day. I feel good. I'm doing good.
It's a beautiful day.
Neighborhood. Take my shoes.
Won't you be mine? Come on. You got the Mr. Rogers sweater on right now.
It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day.
The cardigan.
All right. The cardigan is what it is. So listen, y'all. Glad to be here once again. They let us back. We didn't have to beg to come back. Nobody said we don't want them back. They let us back. So I'm happy to be back once again, y'all. We finna do this. Y'all ready?
Let's do this, man. I'm excited about this one.
So, y'all, we know we got another special guest. All of our guests are special.
But
today's guest is special, special. Ladies and gentlemen, none other than the one, the only, Mr. Kevin Johnson. Woo! I gotta get my pom-pom. I gotta shake my pom-pom. Kevin, why are you shaking your head, man? You don't look excited. You're supposed to be excited when you get an introduction like that, man.
I'm gonna go ahead and date all of y'all. At this point, we've all known each other for 24 years. So you knew what you were getting into.
You know what? Oh, wow. Listen, you telling all of our ages, we may not have wanted that to be put out there, sir. But I appreciate you. It's all good. It's all good. Kev, man, what's up, man? How you doing?
24, so there you go.
24? Okay. All right. Kev, what's up, baby? How you doing?
I'm doing fine. And you all?
Doing good, Kev. Doing good, man.
Good to see you.
Likewise.
It's always a pleasure to see people, especially the ones that we've marched with and known for 24-plus years. It's always a pleasure. But we're going to get right into it, Danielle, Toby. Let's get right into it. Let's see what we can talk about and laugh about and joke about with Mr. Associate Director of Bands, Mr. Kevin Johnson.
Go ahead, Ranger, man. Hey, Kevin, we've talked about you on a couple of episodes. I know one, we had I got a question, and we was talking about arrangements that you've done for the Boom, and I know we're going to get into that later on. But let's just start the episode with like we always do. Go ahead and just tell us your Boom story. Like, how did you come to know the Boom? What was the process of you becoming a Boomsman and keep it going? Let us go. Let us know your Boom story.
I grew up in New Orleans, and of course that was another band centric area. And you know, you just kind of saw a lot of them around in South Louisiana. And a friend of mine actually went to Jackson State 3-4 years before I did, and specifically brought home a tape between Jackson and that other band. And I just kind of fell in love with Jackson State. I like what they were doing. I think that might have been my first time actually hearing quads and quints and all that kind of stuff. And just, you know, it was before YouTube, so there wasn't really a whole lot of access to seeing bands outside of those two bands from Louisiana. You know, we got a lot of that in the Bayou Classic. And, you know, you just kind of learn as a kid in that area. You learn to love that one band and not like the one from North Louisiana. And that was just kind of how I went in the band room and everything. You know, you saw a lot of Bayou Classic tapes and all that kind of stuff. So that, like, literally on a testing day when the band director just wanted us to sit down and shut up, put on a Bayou Classic tape, we all just watched that for a second. And so when we finally got some more VCR tapes of, you know, with Jackson State and Alcorn and all those other people, like, I'd never seen those other bands before. I think I'd only seen maybe Southern, Grambling, and FAMU came down to New Orleans. Jackson State came that same Battle of Bands, but I didn't go. I don't even think I knew Jackson State was coming at that point. But I kind of saw it. I fell in love with what Jackson State was doing, what they sounded like, what they looked like, just seeing something new and different. And found out they had a school of music, or a department of music there as well. I could be a music major, be a band director. So that's what pulled me into Jackson State.
Man. Look,
wow,
Kev came in hot.
Side note, one of the first people I met at Jackson State, I think that's gonna point to Danielle. She stood in on my audition with a big frown in the corner in Mr. Adams' office. She stood in it. I feel like he brought me in, and I don't know if you had to bring something to his office, but he's like, "Oh, you want to sit in?" And in my head, I'm like, "No, she doesn't, go away." But whole audition. And Danielle was one of the first people I met during my audition, before I even got to school.
Wow.
That's hilarious, with a frown on my face. I was probably trying to look serious. Like,
it's the ultimate upperclassman scowl. That's what she had in the corner. I'm going to try to audition.
The scowl, like, yeah, he probably good. He pretty good, but I ain't going to show it.
I don't know what that audition looked like. I remember the sight reading portion. He took a book I already had and just flipped to something way in the back of the book and made me sight read it. So it was a lot of fun that day.
Awesome. Danielle, you did a great job, Kevin.
Well, thanks.
It all worked out.
And then I ended up in his office my first year there. The place where I auditioned was my first office when I got to the
meeting. Wow. That's so cool.
Weird turn of events.
Right.
I never knew that. Danielle, you about to say something? Were you about to say something, Danielle?
I was about to ask what made you want to be a band director? Because you said you learned that Jackson State had a department of music and that you could become a music major. So what led you to want to be a band director?
I think every band director wants to be a band director because of their band director. I had a great band director in high school. Matter of fact, he was the one that took us up to Jackson State to audition and everything. So, I got in the band. I got in the band by accident. In eighth grade, a couple of friends of mine who used to tell me I never go anywhere and I don't do anything, peer pressured me into going to the homecoming game and the pep rally, you know, the ticket came with it. So I remember being in the auditorium and seeing the band down there. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then we went to the football game. They used to take us on a school bus so we could get out of school early. So I'm like, you know, why not? I went to the homecoming game and I saw the band on the field playing like a radio song, like a song that was actually on the radio. I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know bands really did that. You know, because there were other really good high school bands, of course, in the city, but I guess I just didn't really pay attention to them. And kind of seeing that we had one, you know, made me want to join the band. So I joined I went to the band room like that next Monday, and I asked the band director if I could join. And so this was like second semester, eighth grade year, out of nowhere. I don't even know. I just kind of ended up in the band room at that point. And I thought I had to, I was in beginning band, and I thought I had to be an advanced band to even join the marching band and stuff. So by the end of the year, one of the upperclassmen, like I think he was a junior or senior, he was like, hey, you know, you coming to band camp? I was like, no, you know, I got two more years until I join advanced band. He's like, nah, come on to band camp. And I ended up going to summer band camp and getting the marching band and everything. And my junior year, we got out, the band director that I ended up with my junior, senior year, he was the one that kind of just like, you know what? I like what he's doing. I kind of want to do that. And like I said, I auditioned, and the rest is kind of history, I guess.
Wow.
Hey, what instrument did you play for the people that may or may not know? What instrument did you play?
Like every good French horn player, I started on trumpet.
Right, we all did.
I started on trumpet. When I went to that game, I ran home and I told my mom I want to play alto sax. And I wanted to play alto sax.
It looked like
and
a old
said, oh, you already have jazz. Trumpet in the closet. And I was like, yeah, I want to play alto sax. And she was like, well, look, your uncle has an old trumpet in the closet. So if you want to get in that band, go play this trumpet. So I played trumpet for a couple of years, and I didn't even know what a mellophone or French horn was. I remember there was this one guy in band class that used to have this weird curly horn sitting in the side, but we didn't even know what it was. And every time he played it, it just sounded like spit was popping in the horn. I was like, oh, that's terrible. I don't ever want to touch that. So another band in the city actually played a song that we played in the marching band. And we were listening to it in the band room on a cassette, of course. And I was like, dang, that's their song sounds completely different than ours. And we playing the same, you know, I could tell we playing the same arrangement and everything. But I asked one of the older guys, I was like, what is that part that we don't have? It was like, oh, it's a mellophone part. So I went home and I got the Yellow Pages, an actual phone book. And I called like every music store in the metro New Orleans area trying to find a mellophone to see what it was and how much it cost. And I found a mellophone in the suburb, and it was $140. And I put it in my layaway and paid like $25 a month till I got my mellophone. And pushing forward, like we got that new band director, I did like every good band member did. I lied and I said I played percussion. So I went and I played keyboard and piano and stuff in church, so I could play the mallets. And that's all. I didn't want to play snares. So I just want to play the mallets in the back of the band room. And it was a new director. We hadn't had marching band practice yet. So we start practice and I go to get my mellophone and he's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I play mellophone in the marching band. And he didn't say it out loud, but I could imagine in his head. He was like, oh, okay, bet. And then like a couple of months later, he was like, yeah, you're gonna play French horn in concert band and in class and stuff. So he put me on the horn, like, I want to say like right before the Christmas concert. And I stayed there pretty much the rest of, the rest of my time in high school and up until now, basically.
Wow.
Man, I never knew that. I feel like I never knew that. So, you know, when we bring people on that we know, especially the ones that we've marched with, we feel like we know almost everything about them or most things about them. And Kev, it's like in every time we bring somebody on, we learn something new about the people that we have marched with for 4 years, 3 years, 2 years. But then we learn something, be like, wait a minute, you did what? Like, I never knew that. So that's actually a unique story about how you got on the French horn and how you got on the mellophone. The Yellow Pages, man, this generation don't even know what those two words mean. Yellow Pages. Like, that's a
what's
book.
That?
Like, what is that? There are a numbers phone in book. There.
I had this conversation with a student, and we were talking about phone books and stuff, and they were like, so everybody's phone number and address was just in a book? I'm like, yeah. So how did y'all get it? I'm like, they used to just drop it off in front of your house. So they gave everybody, you know, because I guess now, like, you think about information and stuff like that, and people are a lot crazier than they were, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s. So, like, yeah, we had everybody's phone number. Like, that's how it went. It, you know, when we were in school, you just, like, you had a phone book at home, and you could go look up a pizza place. That's how you found a pizza place. Right. Our phone number was really close to, when I was a kid, it was close to Winn-Dixie's, a grocery store. Mm-hmm. So people used to call our house all the time asking if we were the grocery store.
Is your refrigerator running?
Yeah. So like at that point, I'm a stupid little kid. Of course, I started answering like I'm Winn-Dixie at that point.
Winn-Dixie, may I help you? Winn-Dixie, Kevin speaking, may I help you?
Y'all have such, yeah, we got them on. I mean, like, it was ridiculous, man.
Buy one, get
both. I think it was like one number off. So like people used to asking us if we were the grocery store all the time.
That's hilarious.
So we got lamb chops. They BOGO.
Look, that can go so far. That can go so many different ways. We can take that so many different ways. Like, so how, what were the hours of the grocery store? Like, did they call you guys up until 9 p.m.? Like, what was the really time frame?
I was, I taught middle school for a very long time. As a matter of fact, I just had this conversation with Toby not too long ago. The seventh grade boy is the dumbest organism on the entire planet. So we had that phone number when I was a seventh grader. Oh, I can't imagine the stupid stuff I told people on that phone.
Crazy. So check this out. Kev, you said something that kind of sparked. So let's go back a little bit. So from Jackson State made to the Sonny Boom of the South. Then Dunya was like, you know, what made you be a band director? Let's talk about that in between space between Jackson State graduating and then being associate director of bands. Talk a little bit about that real quick for me, if you don't mind.
Okay. I started teaching in 2005 and I taught at, crazy enough, when I got my first job, it had just become a high school. And now that that school, I think they just shut it down because of low enrollment. But they'd opened it because some of the other schools were larger, overcrowded in the area. And I taught there in Louisiana for 3 years. And, you know, I met some great students there. Learned a whole freaking lot because you just like, man, I wish that I could, if I could go back and tell my 22, 23-year-old self, you know, what I knew even at 26, I would have the greatest band on the planet at that point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was right after Katrina. It was really tough. We'd evacuated to Memphis. And my principal had called me. And she was like, well, the school's opening back up. I think it was October 6th in 2005. And I was like, well, I had gone home and I saw the house. So I didn't have a house to go home to. And she actually, her and her husband and her sons, I stayed on a pallet, on an airbed in her house for probably about 2 or 3 months when I first started teaching. You know, I'm forever grateful to them because, I mean, they gave me a place to stay. And even after I left them, I actually rented a house to her dad on. So I'm completely indebted to them for having a place to stay for a solid 3 years of my life working. And then my mom had taken sick and my little brother was in eighth grade. And I just kind of didn't like driving 6 hours. And my grandmother was ill. My mom was about to have surgery. My little brother was in eighth grade going to ninth grade. Like, I probably don't need to be 6 hours away. So I ended up moving to Memphis and I taught at Craigmont Middle School for 6 years. And you know, I love Jackson State, but Craigmont holds a very, very, very strong place in my heart. I can't express how much I learned. I had amazing kids. I actually had some kids that I started in sixth grade that ended up going to Jackson State. I think the last one graduated last year. So I got to see probably about 4 or 5 of my students from First Note to college graduation. So, you know, that's a super special place in my heart, you know, because I should have been paying Memphis City Schools to go to work. I mean, it was just a great place to be. And I think for the last 3 or 4 years of that Craigmont job, this guy that I met in college that lived in Florida kept calling me like, hey, we lost the band director. Hey, we lost the band every freaking year.
Who was the guy?
I don't know who it was, but like every year he's like, man, we lost the band director. And one spring break, I went to Tampa to visit Toby, and I went to work during spring break. I went up there and sat in their band room for like a good couple of hours and talked to the band director and everything. But it wasn't that year. Memphis got taken over by Shelby County my last year. They merged. And it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, it's time to find a different place to be. So I finally took that jump and went to Tampa, and I taught in Tampa for 2 years in an outlandishly affluent area with, you know, the feeder high school. The student parking lot was full of Land Rovers and Mercedes Benzes and BMWs that were better than mine at that point.
Of course.
Right. I met some really, really great kids out there. Great coworkers. The assistant principal's but you know, I met the high school band director and just kind of learned a lot about I'm visibly Black. I went to, you know, a pretty mixed high school, HBCU, and then I went and taught at a Black school. So I'd never been in a band that was kind of patterned after PWI, and kind of seeing how that band camp ran and all that kind of stuff was like really important. I know that's a part of who I am as a director, you know, meeting those kids and seeing how things went, going to assessment in a different area with the concert band, just kind of seeing what those demands were, was really, really important. And then the next 2 years, I went back to Memphis and I taught at Ridgeway Middle School. And the last year I was there, principal was a Jackson State grad too. We went to concert festival and everything. Finally got the band back up and running, but they offered the Jackson State job. So I ended up having to leave Memphis and, you know, move on back to Jackson. And here we go. We're in Jackson at this point. So that was 2018.
Wow. So funny. You know, there.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's a lot of personally, there's a lot of funny stuff in between all of that that I remember, that I recall, just from, you know, I'm in Memphis, still in Memphis, been in Memphis since 03. Kevin was here, he came, he left, and he came back then. He left, and then bam, he's in Jackson State. So it's a lot of stuff. So then, of course, Toby and I, you know, we would talk, hey, man, Kevin Memphis, like, oh, yeah, he coming to Florida. Oh, okay, cool. So funny story, and I don't want to get too far, so don't, yeah.
Cut me off if I get to rambling.
Kevin was in Memphis, and he was on the other side of town from where I live. So I would always talk to him. We text, call every now and again. He was busy. His hours were different from my band director. You know, it's all day, all night long. So I would randomly hit Kevin up. Yo, what's happening? You good? You good? Yeah, yeah, man. I'm good. I'm getting ready to move to Florida. I'm like, okay, cool. I said, well, man, let me know if you need me to help you move anything. He texted me back and said, I'm already on the road. I'm like, you gone? Like, I just saw you. Like, we had just had lunch. Kevin and I.
We went down into that place on Main Street.
Main Street?
Yeah, sure
we
did.
We just had lunch probably a couple of days before that. Kevin didn't say a word. He was like, yeah, man, I'm thinking about moving. I think I'm about to move to Florida. But he was already on the road. I'm like, I'm ready to help you pack up. I mean, to help you load it. You all. He was like, I'm good, man. I appreciate it. He was gone in the wind. But it's crazy. Like, the whole Kevin Johnson story, man, it's like, man, I shout out to you, man. I appreciate everything you've done. Just man, just your mark in the city is still here. You know, it's people that I've met. You know, Ollie Liddell is here. So I've hung out with Ollie a few times. We go over to his crib. And, of course, there's a whole bunch of band heads over there. And so, like, the band head world is like band heads. Like, we talk about people that were very instrumental in the band world. And your name has come up a million times. I'm like, Kev, like, and we played the same instrument. Like, of course, you know, I know Kev.
Since you say Ollie, I'm going to go ahead and shout out Ollie. Because
shout him out.
He wasn't my feeder school in Memphis. But Ollie used to take a lot of my kids into his band. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, well, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and pat myself on the back. You know, I
go had
solid players, but they would go over there to Ollie and just become like, I wouldn't even recognize him no more. Like, they, like, he, what he does, how he would develop him and stuff like that. I mean, just, you know, they could play a scale or two when they got there, but good grief, to hear the growth and stuff like that after being a part of his program. And I really just, I appreciate that. You know, I'm not their father, but, you know, you get middle school kids and you see. Yeah. Middle school kids are really, you know, I talk about that quite a bit, how similar middle school kids are to college kids, and that you get there as this young little bitty sixth grader and you leave as a young adult, as an eighth grader. And, you know, so you grow really, really attached to them. And they, like I said, to see them go over there to Ollie and, you know, like, just when I say scholarship ready, right, just, I mean, he really does a great job with the, you know, with the students that he has, and I'm grateful that he kept the kids that I had engaged in band and interested and able to support themselves, you know, with a scholarship after they graduated.
Yeah. Awesome. Shout out to Ollie.
Most definitely.
So speaking of your amazing talent as a band director, let's get into what you're doing now, right?
Okay.
Which is you're known as the chief arranger of the sounding
room. Yeah.
let's look. And, he's that guy.
Yeah.
He's that guy. Yeah, we're talking about arrangements, right?
Okay. He's that guy. So I want to know how did you become interested in arranging?
I Well, it definitely came from church, like probably every black man story. I remember we were at a Baptist Congress or something like that. We'd go in the summer and spend a week away.
Yeah.
And we had a little band at the Congress, and it was like the weirdest instrumentation ever. It was like six glockenspiels, maybe a trombone, maybe a saxophone, definitely a mellophone. And I don't remember what else, but, we were all talking and, we were just kind of sitting in the band class, and it was like, man, you know, we should play this song at it was like a final presentation, like a last night type deal where they let all the drill teams would come out or the band would play and all that kind of stuff. And, they were like, well, yeah, we should play XYZ song. I'm like, well, I think it was Jesus Is Real or something like that. And I had, for some odd reason, I had some paper with me, I had some staff paper with me, and I scribbled out the parts and stuff, and we played it that last night. I was like, oh, so that's how this works. And I used to just be sitting in high school, you know, we didn't have notation software. I didn't have it at that point. And I would be sitting at the cafeteria table with, like, I didn't know you're supposed to have music on a score at that, you know, as a kid. So I had like 10 sheets of music paper, staff paper in front of me, and I'm just trying to write parts out and stuff. And you know, I didn't know it was going to get played or not. It was just, it was something cool to do. The other kids had those Magic the Gathering cards, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how to play that game. So I just put the music paper on the table. And my aunt ended up buying this old music software called Encore, and it came on like, I think like 8 diskettes. And she was like, I don't know how to use this. Go try it. So I tried it out, and I was like, oh, that's how this works. And, you know, you could figure out how to put how to transpose stuff to different instruments on there and all that. So my career in music is a series of blessings and happy accidents. That's the way I was. Blessings first and then happy accidents everywhere else, basically. So just kind of stumbled into it.
Well, wow. Hey, Kevin, I think I figured out like pretty early that you were that guy. It was your freshman year, your crab year. And I want you to kind of elaborate on how it all came about, how it felt.
Because since I have that title as a freshman in the band.
Right.
Different times, you know. I don't know. I mean, I really just call it a series of accidents. I remember that Dr. Magruder had a meeting in that room that was across from the bathrooms. I think it used to be a faculty lounge or something right. like that. It's where the J-Sets live now. But he was like, hey, you know, if anybody, he asked us like, I think like 5 or 6 questions, like some basic questions on voicing and stuff like that. And I think he was just kind of trying to see if anybody had some decent answers for him. And we talked it through and everything, and you know, it ended up happening. So again, happy accident.
How was it walking in front of the band as a freshman?
Terrifying. I don't want anybody to hear anything else but terrifying. Terrifying.
You are terrible, sir.
Terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying. I wasn't paying attention. Who's this guy?
Well, were role models for you.
I tried to arrange some stuff in high school, and I would give the music to the high school, to my band director, and he would teach it to the band. So I'd never even stood in front of the band before. And to go and stand at Jackson State with like 400 eyes staring at you. That, hey, it's freaking terrifying. And if I were to be honest, I was not unafraid to stand in front of Jackson State's band until like mid-2018. Even when I was in the band, y'all know how we were when we were in the band. So yeah, even when I was in the band,
you never showed it. You never mm-hmm. showed that.
I try not to, but even when you were in the band, you put music together and you absolutely hope that people enjoy it. So, you know, like you go back and there's this process, doesn't matter how long the arrangement is, you always hope that the message gets across. Mm-hmm. First of all, to the people that are playing it. And then second of all, to the people that are listening to it. So like, you when you get in front of the band, even when I talk to the young arrangers now, I try to tell them, make your music super easy to read, not that it has to be like easy music, but like make sure, literally make sure it's clear, make sure like they, that it's visible, legible and stuff like that. I'm not talking about the complexity of music. Just make sure it's legible, make sure that people can easily see the keys, you know, stuff along those lines, because they have to catch it fast in order to like onboard them to what you're doing. Y'all know how we were in the band. We had a solid, you had a solid 3 minutes to get the band engaged with what you were trying to present. Or, you know, somebody might have been in the trumpet section going, ah, and then your music is playing. You caught that, right? it's always an element of, you create this art, you know, not from the standpoint of composition, but, you know, you present this thing that you worked on, and I hope the message gets across. And sometimes it still doesn't. Even, you know, this late in my career, we play songs in the band room, and I'm like, yeah, we're not going to play this one. You know, it just, some of it works, some of it doesn't. So, you know, I can imagine that piece of anxiety was even more profound at 20, 21 years old, you know?
So you faked that well. I mean, like, not showing the anxiety and the stress inside. Toby, I call it,
I'm right there next to him.
I'm like, it's Denzel on the outside, but it's Samuel L. on the inside. It's like, snakes on the fake plane.
We in the same section. I never saw that. I'm looking at him like, okay. So look, so Danielle was asking what got you into arrangement. So I remember you arranged a song for us your freshman year. Mm-hmm. What was that song, sir? Do you recall?
Twas the Thong Song.
Here's
the crazy part. If I were a director and I presented that to me now, no way in heck I would have done it. Because like,
man, just, this song was a hit.
I look at it for, like, again, we played it like 2021 or 2020, something like that. And just like, man, I hope this doesn't come across arrogant, but just like, I could hear the 20 something year difference. Like, it was, good Lord. Like, this, just like from the standpoint of looking back, I'm like, think about it. You look at a paper that you have from kindergarten where you're writing, you know, you're like, man, my letters were unclear and all that kind of stuff. And now, you know, looking at it from that standpoint, I was like, man, I wish I'd have got about 3 or 4 more hints or tips on it, that I could have refined some things and just, you know, just made a better product. You know, it worked in 2000. Arranging, like, the way marching band stuff sound now is so totally different, like harmonically, from a voicing standpoint, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, just kind of seeing that difference, like, yeah, I'd have sent me back to my room to fix a few things if I'd have gotten it at that time. That's all.
So piggybacking on that, like, because like, a couple episodes back, I got a question where we went around and we were talking about, you know, Kevin Johnson hits, right? You've been doing this 24 years on the collegiate level. If we're talking about your years in college, you know, your years after, because you were still arranging for the Boom and other bands, you know, throughout your time, and then coming back. And because I remember, like, we talked about it briefly at Coleman, like, you were a really, really good recruiter with our students. And like I said, it was a different brand of students than that you were accustomed to. But I would walk past that band room and he's teaching the kids Shake It Off by Taylor Swift, and those kids were hanging them. It was like, but he was writing that stuff and being diverse in his act. So like, how have you been able to maintain relevant? Because, you know, a lot of people was arranging at the same time that you started arranging, when we're talking about 99, 2000, 2001. That their styles, their penmanship hasn't changed. You can still tell that, you know, this person wrote it. Now, we can tell that it's a Kevin Johnson arrangement, but it has evolved over the past 24 years. How have you been able to maintain relevant, and how have you been able to, like, sharpen your craft?
First and foremost, again, a happy accident falling into that middle school job. I had to start students playing instrument in high school, but there was this pressure of performing in high school that I didn't have my first year. Like, I feel like my first year teaching middle school, most of that was stuff that I wanted to do. I wanted to do a Christmas concert. I wanted to play this pep rally. I wanted to do X, Y, and Z. So I had some time to kind of fall back a little bit. And, you know, the school hadn't really had a strong band before. So there was a low expectation at that point. So I had a little grace in that respect to really dig in and keep my kids how to play the instrument, not march all over the place and stuff without barely, you know, knowing how to play. And in teaching those really young kids how to play the instrument, there's kind of like this series of cheat codes, I guess. You figure out, like, man, if a kid is going to play trumpet, it's going to do these things. If a kid is going to play trombone, it's going to do these things. And like, you learn the tendencies of the instruments, you learn what the instruments speak the best and all that kind of stuff. And you know, like modern notation software, if you put a note on an instrument and it's too high, it'll usually start coloring it yellow or red and stuff like that. So if I look at like older arrangements, if I were to put them into the modern software, they would be yellow and red all over the place. And like, just kind of learning how the instruments speak their native voice makes it a lot easier to make the instrument sound its best. And I learned a lot of what sounds the best on the instrument by teaching sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, especially beginners. And I would tell anybody, I think there's a distinct difference between stuff I did in 08 on up versus 07 and back, because 08 is when I started teaching middle school. And I was like, oh, you know, I didn't have collegiate players. So I had to make the sound that I want come out of a sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade band, and kind of figuring out how to make that sound the same with a different instrumentation or younger kids, I think was a big help in helping me to learn how to make the instrument speak the best. And I'm a Gemini, so, you know, we're adaptable. And I think maybe that's what it is as far as like keeping up with what's going on now. We have kids in the band, and we get kids because of the way, because we're competitive in this arena. And I have to kind of keep tabs on what works, on, you know, like literally looking at, I have this piece of music here and I can see, oh, they're not engaged to play this part. That's not gonna work. Let me scrap it. Let me pull it back and put something in there and kind of watch their reactions. Oh, okay, that is more engaging. They enjoy playing it like that. And then I carry that, you know, to another song, or, you know, just kind of put that in my memory bank. Oh, that worked. This didn't. Let me not use that.
Wow. So you said something. So I got a question. So yeah, I got a question. So like, Danielle, Toby, here's something that Kevin just said that really I never even thought about. He just said something about there was a part that he may have written that the kids may not have been engaged in. I don't remember Mr. Adams, Dr. Magruder, Doc, whoever was the arranger. Ollie wrote some stuff for us. Kevin wrote some stuff for us when we were in the band. I don't remember getting a piece of music and not being engaged in what the part was. All we were taught was, here's the music, learn it. Imagination, Black and Blues. Get ready. I mean, you know, Swoop. I mean, I don't remember. So, Toby Danielle, do y'all even remember like getting a piece of music based on what Kev just said and not being engaged in the part? Like, that don't even make sense to me.
I do. I know there were certain parts like that William Bethea wrote. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't everything that he wrote, but it was certain parts. It was like, oh, like, I really like this part, or you enjoy playing it, and you can see like the body language of everybody, that. Like, oh, like, yeah, here it comes. You know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah, I get it. I don't know. And it's not a shout out to anybody else, but being that in tune into your craft of arranging, to be able to notice that the kids are engaged at this moment, they're playing, like, I'll even say like a French horn part. Like, it was a time where I never heard the da 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 in PYT. And then suddenly you hear it, and it was like, oh, and then you see everybody else on that line get excited about it because you know it's going to pierce through and people are going to hear your part. It's certain parts and cadences. I would say
maybe think of it this way. Terrell, what was your favorite song? Like, or it doesn't have to be one. Like, what were some of your favorite songs that you played?
I'll give you one, 7 Day Weekend.
Why?
Because of the mellophone part.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Exactly.
That's crazy. You're right. Engaged. I never thought about that.
It was prominent. It was like one of those songs that we played where the mellophone part like sliced through the whole rest of the song. So like, you were engaged in that part. Damn. Versus God, what was the name of that song?
Outstanding.
Close the door.
Oh my goodness. Close the door. Close the door. I did not like that song.
Close the door. Like, so I remember all of our music used to be on those little half sheets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Close
the door was on like 11 by 17 because it was so long.
It was so long.
Legal paper. It was so long. But like the part was, it was like it was redundant, or you're playing the same thing over and over. So you kind of zone out. And like literally think about, we were more, I'm going to go ahead and say it. We were more disciplined back when we were in the band.
Yeah.
We could sit there with our longer attention spans because we weren't, you know, like we didn't have a smartphone sitting there in front of us. Mm-hmm. That's nature of the beast. That's no shade to the, you know, the modern generation. Even us, like if we're sitting for a couple of minutes, you know, us millennials, zennials, whatever, we're looking for the phone as well. You know what I'm saying? So like now that's where the students are. So it's, I don't think it's a bad thing. It's more of a, hey, get to the good part, man. Like, get to the part.
Get to the point. TikTok, man. Go.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, it's so consumable. Think about it. You can look at a band now, and I do it quite a bit. You know, if the song isn't pushing, you go hit the button and scroll it forward and go to the next band, you know, or go to the next clip or the next song. So you have to be, more eye-catching and more engaging now. We played, like, our book, we may have played a fifth quarter, right? And we were okay to play that same fifth quarter the next week because nobody was able to consume. You know, like, you know, for instance, when we were in the band, we go to Pine Bluff, right? I didn't see that Pine Bluff fifth quarter from, you know, that super long one from my freshman year.
Yeah.
I didn't see it until it was on YouTube. I didn't know anybody who had a tape of it. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you know, and how would I get a band tape? You're in Memphis, you're in Tampa. Where are you now, y'all? Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia.
So in that respect, like if I was trying to, at that point, if I was trying to trade a tape with y'all, right, I got to mail it. And then if you want a copy of it, I still got to mail it to you. So that's only three of us. But like now you go look at a band and you can see that this fifth quarter had 63,000 views. You know what I mean? So it gets around so much quicker. We can't necessarily speak the same way that we did when we were in the program. So it just, you know, it's just a different time.
So we're talking about stress and anxiety, like, because we've talked about it in previous episodes as far as like with the kids and how much media attention that they're getting from all of these other platforms that's focused on band and marching band and music. And like, I know you and I've had a conversation where, you know, you would go into sectionals and you would hear kids practicing apart and it's sounding different than it did last week. And you can tell what, you know, outlet on YouTube they've been listening to based off of the critiques and things like that. Mm-hmm. For you and for Dr. Little and, you know, the band staff, you know, how much pressure has it added to your job that, you know, it's instant? Soon as you guys play something, it's out there on social media, it's out there on TikTok, it's out on YouTube, and everybody's consuming it. How much pressure has that put on you? Because I know years past, there was pressure on the band directors, but like, shoot, a lot of that stuff wouldn't get out to the masses to a year or 2 years later. I think I got 96 Boom, you know, in 98.
Yeah, exactly. That 97 tape that got me. I didn't get that in 1997.
Right.
You know? And shout out to Mr. Weary for, you know, for getting me a tape of Jackson State.
We shout him out so much, man.
You know, I had him hollering on that tape at his kids. So my God. But I'm gonna go ahead and be arrogant here and say I would be more stressed if I was at a different band because I work at Jackson State and I work with Sonic Boom South. And pound for pound, no shade to other directors, but this is cockiness. I'm gonna go ahead and throw this out there.
Do it.
We just got some of the best kids around, man. These are the kids that marched in a snowstorm. These are the kids that marched in water crises, plural. You know, these are kids that just, they have a strong love for the program. They have a strong love for the school. And they're respectful. They're just a good group of kids, man. And we push out content to these students. And what I appreciate is, you know, if we play a song or something, especially a song that's not popular or something they wouldn't know. Like, for instance, I remember distinctly in 2019 when we were working on Candy Rain. I was talking to them. I was like, you know, I was in middle school. This is the skating rink song. This is, you know, like I'm describing the things that I remembered. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I felt like me explaining it to the students, like they connected with it to the point where like, oh, I'll take some of these memories and make this song work like this as well. And like that same thing now, you know, like we can talk to them, we can explain this is why, you know, for instance, this year was, I can't think of the name of the song offhand, but it was a song Dr. Little presented to the band. And he was like, yeah, you know, this is just one of those songs. Like I heard it for the first time and it, you know, it got to me and I just wanted to play it, blah, blah, blah. And he, and like when the band played it, I think that they kind of keep that with them and respond to it in that way. Because there's kind of like a story behind it and stuff like
this
that.
This generation, they need to know the why.
Yeah, yeah. And telling them that why really makes them connect with it a little bit better. And I think that they interpret the music and they kind of make those memories or those feelings work for the people that are listening to it. I can see it when it happens in the band room. Like I know when it clicks. And you know, it's just a great feeling because like we're all kind of on that same page. And you know, it just happens thankfully, it happens quite a lot. You know, just us kind of talking to the students and everything. So I think that tremendously lowers the stress and anxiety in that respect. We go to games and stuff like that. You know, we have practice. We try our best to organize the nights of practice and the time and stuff like that to make sure that the students are as prepared as possible. And they're responsible in that. You know, they learn stuff quickly. So like I don't know if that's another series of happy accidents, but you know, like I said, we have really, really great students. And the fact that we have those really great students really pulls a lot of the anxiety and stress down because of the work that they do. It makes our jobs a lot easier as a band staff.
Man, that's crazy. So let's check this out. Ironically, the time is ticking away and we got to get ready to bring this to a close. Before we do that, Danielle, Toby, y'all got anything else y'all want to kind of jump in there, pour in there, add in there, then we'll let Kev kind of give his last remarks and closing statements and arguments and accolades and things of that sort.
I got to make him feel uncomfortable and give him his flowers, right?
Do that. Give it to him. Flowers.
Give it to him. Like, you the stop camera button. Does it work?
No, it does not. Close out here.
I'm not going to make it too awkward, but I want to say, like, you kind of brought up a lot of the things that I had to say already about you. Like, yeah, you're one of the most talented, you are probably the most talented person that I've ever met in life, you know. Thank as far you. As like somebody that I consider a friend, real quick, like just talent wise and being able to just to do multiple things, and then also having that art, me being an educator, you know, it reason why I fought so hard for you, because I knew you were able to connect with kids, and that's something that's so important to me. Because like a lot of times, as far as like in education, as an administrator, an assistant principal, yeah, I can put you in a room with people that's going to help you be successful when we're talking about content. But being able to show kids that you care, that's something that you can't teach, and that's something that you exude life with. Something else that you also talked about that I really want to come in is your sense of resiliency. You know, the book years back came out, Who Moves My Cheese? Right now I'm going through a situation where my cheese is being moved everywhere, and you know, a lot of more Samuel than Denzel. And you know, that you're something that, you know, you've given me quotes as far as like sometimes you got to pull the arrow back in order to go forward. And you've done that continuously in your life. When we're talking about going through Katrina, going to Memphis, going back to New Orleans, you know, you quit, you move, you get there, you do what you got to do, and you get out. And you know, you look at it, you're able to simplify processes in order to make it work for you, and able for you to push through. And then lastly, something that I have to commend you with, in Will Smith's book, he said something, only speak when it improves the sound around you. And that's something that I connect with you, because any room that you walk in, you make it better. And you're really good at sitting back, watching the process, seeing what everybody got to say, and then you'll make all those connections and you bring it together. So yeah, you improve the sound quality of every room that you walk in. So I'm grateful. I know Terrell's grateful and Dee's grateful as well to be able to consider you a friend. And I want to apologize right now in front of everybody. And I think I slowed down this year, like as far as like texting you songs that I think you need to arrange for the band. I'm down 50%. I'm down 50%. It's gonna get to a point where, because I trust you guys, and I've gone on record and say this 23 boom is the greatest boom ever. It's the greatest marching band ever. I'm gonna say that on record. We're gonna record it and we'll say it over and over and over again. It's the greatest boom. Every year's supposed to be better, but it was something special about this one, and you kind of talked about it because it's I give the kids credit because they are great kids. They are good kids. Mm-hmm. But
absolutely,
attitude reflects leadership. And so what you guys are doing is an amazing job, and we are very appreciative of it. That's it. Those are your flowers, man.
So
Yes, sir.
The whole time.
Relax.
Relax. I don't want to go too hard.
Danielle, you got anything?
No, man. This was fun. This was fun. I'm so happy we got to do this. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna say one thing, and then I want Kev to kind of give his last, you know, shout outs or whatever, if he have any, or any, if he have any shout outs, or if he doesn't, that's fine. So I want to say this one thing here, Kev. I know I may have told you this. I don't know. When Kev came to Jackson State in 2000, right? I was an upperclassman in the mellophone section. He came in on mellophone and he played French horn. So of course, you know, if you play French horn and mellophone, you got some kind of, you got a little talent. You got some skills, a little bit, because that's not an easy instrument. No disrespect, no shade to any other instrumentation. That's any of that, right? Right. Kev came in as a freshman knowing his stuff. And Dr. Ladell looked at me and he was like, Keith, you need to tighten up.
Made my life hard, is what you're saying?
No, not at all. I was like, man, this man here can skills, he can play. Let me get in this practice room and practice. So to the accolades, man, that Toby gave you, man, I just wanted to say, man, I've always admired you as a French horn player and as a mellophone player. Just a person that was always on your horn. You were always about the business, man. Okay. That's all I got. So I don't want to go too far there. Kev, do you have any closing remarks, shout out, something you want to say, something you want to get off your chest? You want to tell Toby something that you've been wanting to tell him for the last 20 years that you've been holding in? You can say it right now.
Never move to Tampa, man.
It's a safe space.
Wow. if I thank everybody, I'd screw it up. You know, I thank my mom, of course, for, I made so much noise in the house as a kid. Good God. So thank you, mama, for letting me make all that noise in the house. My dad ended up buying me a keyboard, and that's probably why I was making all that noise. So I'm grateful for that. You know, my siblings, for just being around, and you know, grandparents, just my family was really, really instrumental in the whole music thing. Of course, my high school band director, college band directors, the people that I came in with on French horn, you know, I probably just texted them a couple of days ago. We you know, we still keep in contact. But most important as an educator, at this point, almost 20 years of teaching, I've met a lot of kids. And every last one of those kids that I've met, and I'm sure the ones that I will meet, have taught me something that has made me the educator that I am. So, you know, I'm just really grateful to the students that have inspired me, that have taught me, that have put up with me, all of those types of things. You know, as a teacher, that's what makes you, that's your job, the students. So co-workers, principals, good ones and bad ones, I learned from those. Haven't had too many bad ones, thankfully. So, you know, I'm just, all the people that I've met, I'm really grateful. You know, with I heard a saying that was, everything is practice for something. So like every person that I've met has taught me something that I can use in practice. Hopefully it'll help somebody else. So I'm really grateful for all that.
All good. Well, man, we appreciate you, bro. We appreciate your time, man. Always a pleasure to have a conversation with you on and off the air. It's just great to be in your space, man. We appreciate you, man.
Thank you all.
Once again, thanks again for coming on to Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. Y'all tuning in to Band Sessions with the Boom. We have had Mr. Kevin Johnson on, the Associate Director of Bands for the Jackson State University.
Let me make sure I say their names. The band,
say it right.
Staff, Roderick Little, Chloe, yep, Crowley, and Courtney Lett currently. Thank you all. Because when you talk about people that's got to put up with me, definitely them.
Shout out to Chloe. She's been on the show. We're reaching out to Rod. We got to get Rod on.
Yeah. That's what's up. All right, y'all. So we about to sign out. Thank y'all for tuning in once again. Band Sessions with Da Boom. This is Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club, and we out of here. Peace out. Holla.
Peace.
Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club is presented by Bet Online.